With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
Hello everybody and welcome to the Cult Popture Podcast. My name is AJ and you are joining us for something we do every year, which is where we look at the year to come in film and we talk about which film looks the worst or which one we're most excited for. It's gone by a few different names, including most anticipated, most dumbest looking, and this year it's like the dumbest looking films we hope are coming out in 2021, which is because a lot of the stuff got delayed from last year. So if you enjoyed last year's episode, you might find that some of this year is the same information. One of the problems with making a podcast about the very, very unstable landscape that is currently Hollywood is that, as opposed to before the pandemic when it was very stable, is that a lot of the stuff is being delayed as we're releasing these episodes. And so we recorded this a couple of days ago and already stuff has moved. So in this episode, we do talk about Kingsman, which was pushed to August, and also A Quiet Place 2 was also pushed to late 2021. So we do still talk about them in their original release dates, or at least the release dates that were original when we started recording, a lot of the stuff could even still change between when I've recorded this little intro and when you hear it. And also, this is a two-parter episode, so I imagine in 1 week when we release part two, even more will have moved. So this is just a little warning for that. There are no time codes in the description of this episode for when we talk about stuff, just because we're not spoiling anything. But this is a two-parter episode, so give it a listen and let us know what you are most excited for, what you think is going to be the dumbest looking film, or what do you think will be the dumbest film? And yeah, enjoy the episode.
What's up, movie fans? Welcome along to another ripping episode of the Cult Popture Podcast. I'm your host, DJ Dick Mart, and and I'm joined today by Jizzy Jez and AJ.
I was waiting for like Action Jones or
Action Jones News. Give us an action. Describe an action for us.
Okay. A kick is when you take your foot. Stay with me. You propel it forward or backwards. You can do a back kick. In a attempt to move or damage something.
Dick Mart, you're not great at this. I have to say that was a terrible prompt.
Yeah. Why, it was a bad prompt or was a bad acceptance of the prompt?
I think both, but I'm gonna lay it at your feet because you're hosting. Mm.
While I refuse to host any longer.
Yes, and
welcome to the Cult Popture, the Cult Popture podcast, everybody. My name is AJ. I'm here with Jeremy and Richard, and this sunny January evening, we're going to be talking, doing something we do every year, which is talking about the movies that are coming out in the next 12-month period. This is a little different. So the first couple of years we did this, we did the most anticipated films to come out in that year. Then last year, I suggested to mirror it with the most disappointing films of the year, we do the dumbest looking films of the year.
Just so that they're all negative.
Yeah, yeah. So it's more of a negative stance, more of a cynical, sarcastic New Zealand position to take. And then none of the movies that we talked about last year came out.
Well, a few of them did, but it was rare. They were the exceptions that proved the rule.
Which, as you could say, is the dumbest thing.
Hmm. That's true. And so we pushed it all back. And so this is actually, you can actually just go listen to the dumbest looking films of 2020 episodes again instead of this one, because a lot of it is going to be covering the same.
Yeah, mate, I've got the exact same things to say about them as well.
I've got stale year old takes. No hot takes here.
No
hot takes, none whatsoever. And this is going to be, the title of this episode is going to be the dumbest looking films we hope are coming out in 2021. part one, because we are anticipating this will be a two-parter episode.
Yeah, we're most anticipating it.
Very good.
All right, so the way we do this is, and this is by no means a comprehensive list of everything that is coming out in 2021. There's plenty of lists readily available of the movies that are coming out. I've gone through a few of them and I've put them in release order. So there'll be ones that we've left off. Please comment and let us know what your most anticipated films of the year are. Maybe we didn't know about them. Maybe when I read the title of it, I didn't realize the significance of it and I didn't think to do any deeper research. But what we're going to do is we're going to start, because it's already mid to late January, that is, the month.
Thank you.
And so there's a film coming out called Nomadland, which is the new film from Chloe Zhao, who will make another appearance later on in this podcast, or probably next episode if this gets broken into two. But she made a film in 2017 called The Rider, which... cards on the table, I have not seen, but by all accounts it is amazing. And she was handpicked by Marvel to make Eternals, which is coming out at the end of the year. But she had made this little film called Nomadland, which is Frances McDormand plays a widow, a nomad, who just kind of goes around being a nomad. And a lot of the supporting cast are played by actual nomads, which is kind of one of the things that this film's been praised for. This is one of those films everyone's like, people are just saying, you know, when Chloe Zhao wins Best Director, when Frances McDormand wins Best Actress, when this film wins Best Picture, it's kind of a given at this point that this is going to do very well at the Oscars. I'm very excited to see it because I've heard so much about it, but I would love to know, Jezzy and Big AJ, what are your opinions on the film? Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. I've seen the poster for it. I've seen the a screenshot of Frances McDormand. It's a very blue looking film. I know almost nothing about it. You've told me the most I've heard about it just now.
Yeah.
If it's gonna win Oscars, I imagine we'll probably see it for our Oscars season later on this year.
Which, worth pointing out, the Oscars season this year, normally we'd be kind of doing them around now. But the Oscars aren't until April 25th this year, and the 12-month period with which films are eligible, which is normally just a calendar year, has now been extended to 14 months. You have to the end of February to get a film out. I'm sure we'll go into this more come April when we start covering Oscars season. But and essentially to be eligible, normally you have to screen in a theater in Los Angeles, but now you essentially just have to prove that you intended on doing that. And if you weren't able to because of the coronavirus pandemic, which is the reason.
The dog ate my theater in LA.
Yeah. So Jeremy, what about, have you heard of Nomadland?
I haven't. No, I've taken an interesting tack this year going into this podcast. I have consumed almost zero news outside of what is delivered to me by BBC.
By mainstream
Washington
media.
Post. Yeah, mainstream media. I have not gone looking
at
any...
I like to call it something else between the three of us. I don't call it mainstream media. I call it something else. I'll leave it up to the listeners to figure it out.
Is it the Lion Media?
It was lamestream media was what I was going for.
Oh, yes. You're the only person who says that.
I'm definitely...
Well, no, he's not the only person, but he was the first one.
Yeah, so anyway, I have not heard of Nomadland, but as soon as you said the word...
Do you want to go see it together, Jeremy? Do you want it to be our annual film trip this year?
Ooh, that could be good. Yeah, let's do it. Although I do like those to be horror movies because I always enjoy the tension that's like rippling through your body as it sits next to me. It's very erotically charged.
Like when we saw
A Quiet Place.
If Beale Street could talk.
Oh yes, that was yeah.
Terrifying.
That's horrifying.
God, the social injustice is just so scary.
The tension. So that's Nomadland. Yeah, I've kind of avoided trailers for it. I tend to these days kind of just go, well, I'm probably going to see it. I don't need to be convinced to see it by any kind of marketing. Yeah. I've just heard it's very good, so I'll just see it anyway.
I think that Frances McDormand is one of those actors that she's gotten into a place where, like, there's some directors, some actors that, and some screenwriters that whatever they choose to do is just always going to be very interesting. Like she, whatever she chooses to put herself into, and I'm sure she is now at the stage of her career where she can just go, "Yep, I'll be in your movie," and everyone's like, "Thank you, yes."
As Michael Keaton, the male Frances McDormand?
No, Chris. What's his face? Chris
Evans.
Pine. No.
Pratt.
Damn it!
Gonna need a.
Chrissy Teigen.
What's that?
Chrissy Teigen.
You're going to need to pay this off, Jeremy.
Chris, he's the old...
Chris Dorner.
Older dude.
Christopher Plummer.
Oh my gosh, not that old.
That's the older dude! Why are you mad?
That's the oldest dude.
Older than Chris Pine and Chris Evans and Chris Pratt. Mm. And in movies with Frances McDormand.
Chris Kattan.
Oh my... I'm on IMDb. This is ridiculous.
What movie is she
in?
Go on,
I have no idea who you mean, Jeremy.
I was thinking maybe you were going to say John Malkovich, since they kind of have the same face. You just put hair on John Malkovich and it's Frances McDormand.
Oh, this is so... guys...
What are they from, Jeremy?
I can't even...
Are you thinking of Tom Hanks? You're just thinking of Tom Hanks, aren't you?
What movies has she been in with Tom Hanks? No.
Chris...
This is... This...
Chris Christopherson.
No!
Chris Christie.
No, he's...
Governor Chris Christie. Yes.
Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
I feel like you're mad at us, Jeremy, and I don't know how to help.
This is bad content, Jeremy.
This is such bad
content. You trying to remember the
Chris.
Hold on.
Comment
below with what Chris you
there
think
There are so
Jeremy
many Chris's in Hollywood. This is a meme.
It's literally the most common name in Hollywood. Christian Bale.
Oh my God, this is...
Christmas Jones, the Bond girl from The World Is Not Enough.
No, what's he been in? Oh, this is so annoying.
We're not moving on until you figure it out.
I'm just going to go through all the movies that Frances McDormand has been in.
Martin Freeman.
This is...
Oh, Chris Rock.
No!
They both are part of the Fargo mythology.
And Fargo, yeah.
Absolutely not. No,
I shouldn't have asked. I shouldn't have asked if Michael Keaton is the male version of Frances McDormand.
Yeah, well, but now I fucking want to know.
Guys, I'm so sorry. This is so painful. Oh no, I feel so much
think
pressure.
Think of one film, right. Jeremy. We'll be able to
right,
tell
I'm
you.
I'm stopping recording.
John Carroll Lynch. He plays Norm Gunderson in Fargo, and he's fucking great. He's also in The Founder with Michael Keaton, the male Frances McDormand.
So Michael Keaton, the male Frances McDormand. How about we move on to the next film and Jeremy continues to look for this mysterious, elusive Chris.
Chris Elliott?
Oh, I know who you mean. You're talking about who's the...
Chris Noth.
No, who's the bad guy in the Muppets movie?
Yes.
Oh,
Chris Cooper.
Thank you. Oh my gosh.
This is the worst.
Not Chris Noth, aka Big from Sex and the City. Okay. All right. Well, that was fucking not worth it, Jeremy.
August 06. He was in
he's
August
not, he's
Osage
not even
County.
The male Frances McDormand.
He is the male.
People might not be hearing this, but we're watching Jeremy get told off by presumably his wife on the Zoom call right now. It's very he's trying to like tell her yes, sorry, okay without saying anything, and it's very funny.
Babe, you will literally wake the baby.
But babe, I just found out it was Chris Cooper.
It's Chris Cooper.
Hey, by the way,
and she's like, oh, okay, sorry.
I'm just gonna personal request to the Discord. Please sound off in the Discord if you agree that Chris Cooper is the male version of Frances McDormand. He's just got that same grittiness.
Sound off in the Discord if you think that Jeremy will literally wake the baby.
not an extreme enough of a situation to use the term literally.
No. Actually, what will happen is that they will sound off in the Discord, but they'll sound off in the Discord about one comment that you make in the post credit scene rather than anything we talk about in the next 2 hours.
Yeah, fuck you. I love burritos, man.
Yeah. Yeah, fuck the Discord.
All right. So that's Nomadland.
13 minutes in.
And Chris Cooper.
So 5th of February, coming to Netflix, which is a streaming service.
I've not heard of it.
We have a film called Malcolm and Marie. Have you guys heard of this?
This is one of those things where I've avoided the trailer for, because I was like, I might probably see this.
Yeah, so this is stars Zendaya and John David Washington, and I think nobody else. It was filmed during lockdown. And so it's like, yeah, one of those things that they got a house and they're like, we're still so eager to work, let's keep doing stuff. And it's about a filmmaker and his girlfriend. They discuss their past relationships while returning home from a movie premiere. I don't know. Like, I feel like I'll watch it, but part of me worries that it might be like a little too pretentious. It's shot in black and white.
Gosh. Which, you know. I feel like we're probably going to get, because of COVID, we're probably going to get a lot of these movies, and they're movies that normally when we talk about these things, we say it seems like a play because they're all stuck in a room, or they're all in one location, and it's all just a sort of like deep and complex conversation between a couple of characters.
Are we going to talk about the other movie that was filmed or is set in lockdown?
I don't have it on my list. I think maybe because it's actually already out.
It's got...
if the one you're referring to is Locked Down with Anne Hathaway and Chiwetel Ejiofor, is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah, that's a heist movie. So naturally it'll be lost on me. There, I did the joke. apparently it's real bad, and all the reviews are like, hey, guess what? This movie's bad, if you couldn't tell by its plot synopsis.
Yeah.
What is the plot synopsis?
It's a heist taking place during lockdown.
Yeah, and it's like most... You're like, oh my God, how did they film a whole movie during lockdown? And you watch the trailer and it's like, oh, it's mostly on Zoom. there's also that Michael Bay movie which shot during lockdown. I believe it might just be produced by him, but it's they got into quite a lot of trouble for shooting during lockdown. Songbird.
Michael Bay getting into trouble?
Starring Kiwi KJ Apa.
Is that the one where it's about like COVID 2021?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, COVID-19
has mutated into COVID-23.
Yeah.
And the world is in its fourth pandemic year. Oh, imagine that, still being in lockdown in 2023. Like, that'll even happen.
And like, they released it while we were all still in the like very, it felt like way too early stages of dealing with what COVID was. And then they were setting a dystopian future essentially in what we were already in. And it's just like, hey, that's a great marketing technique. Make people feel even more depressed about their
but
lives.
But isn't it on the side of like the government's faking it? Wasn't that what it got into trouble for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, kind of like resist.
No, it got into trouble because of the actual like, the way it got around lockdown rules, and I don't think it was completely safe. And
but also people were, it definitely had the tone of kind of like resist the government and like, you know, like KJ Apa's character is kind of like trying to, it felt very Hunger Games-esque, like trying to get around the dystopian government that's trying to control everything.
Preying on the wrong anxieties that should not be preyed upon right now.
Mm. Yeah, 100%.
Before we move on to the next film, Jeremy, I would just like to get your opinion on the 1996 film Lone Star.
I loved it.
Oh, cool, because it's the only film that Chris Cooper and Frances McDormand have starred in together. And it has 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. Roger Ebert loved it, so good taste,
that's
I guess.
Great.
Well, Roger Ebert and Jeremy Birds.
And look, and it stacks up to the theory that those two are only ever in great movies.
Well, the thing is that also Chris Cooper. Hey,
that's who you were thinking of.
No, Chris, right. it comes from him getting a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for his role in Adaptation, which feels like a very Frances McDormand movie.
Yep, I'll concede to that.
Like Meryl Streep.
Anyway,
it's Meryl Streep, the female Chris Cooper. Yeah.
So that's Malcolm and Marie.
Cool.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It's like you said, Jeremy. It's going to be a very much a feels like a play kind of movie. And it will be interesting to see how much like good art comes out of this whole. You know what we're all going through. I don't need to say it.
Say it.
So 12th of Feb we have one of the first big releases of the Warner Brothers HBO Max deal. If you're not aware, this is what happened with Wonder Woman 1984, where films are going to be released the same day in theaters and on HBO Max. They're going to be available to stream on HBO Max for a month, and they're going to be released in theaters in places where theaters are safe to open. Now, I'll get to what the movie is in just a second, but I think it's going to be popping up a little bit, so I think it's important that we kind of talk about this because this is like game changing for the industry.
I don't think it'll last the whole year. I reckon if depending on how well the vaccine does, because they've already talked about taking Dune off this release, structure. So
yeah, there's a lawsuit currently.
Yeah, I reckon they'll do it for the movies at the start of the year, but as we get into the year, they'll rescind their deal with HBO Max.
Yeah, I think personally that the likes of Christopher Nolan and all these people complaining about it should grow up.
Ooh.
And that like to me honestly because Christopher Nolan had that famous quote where he said these people went to bed one night thinking they were working for the best film studio and found out they were working for the worst streaming service, which is just such a petty little thing to say. And because Warner Brothers has traditionally been very much on the side of the filmmakers and the actors and whatnot, and it's kind of like, you know, the filmmakers studio. And to call HBO Max the worst streaming service just feels like you're an upset little child. But
someone's never heard of Crackle.
None of us. Yeah.
Quibi, the one that didn't even last the year.
Quibi's the biggest death of the COVID the COVID pandemic.
I don't think you can attribute that to COVID at all.
Yeah. But yeah, like to me, this is Warner Brothers and HBO Max being like, okay, America fucked up this pandemic real bad. How do we not punish the rest of the world for this? And this is like, look, if you're in a state where it's safe to go to the movies and you feel comfortable going to the movies, by all means, go. But honestly, they're just going to be making, they're still making movies. It's safe to make movies, but it's not safe to release movies. So there's just going to be this pile that just gets bigger and bigger of completed movies, and it makes sense to actually start releasing them no matter what kind of thing. And I think there's either like 12 to 15 of these releases anticipated this year, and HBO Max is what, like $15 or so a month. If you keep it for the year and you watch 12 of these brand new release movies, that's the same price as, you know, going to the movies 12 times.
For one person, but you'll get like people coming over to watch movies.
Yeah, exactly. Like, obviously, you know, there's going to be households that share them and whatever. But I think it's a great idea, and I think it's a way to satisfy everyone except for the filmmakers, and I think they just need to grow up a little bit. We went to go see Wonder Woman 84 in the cinema, and I was like, you know what, this was, yeah, cinemas need to improve. Like big chain one, like I do still love going to like a an indie theater or an art house theater where they kind of respect the film going process a little bit more, and they play films you can't really see anywhere else. But going to like a big chain theater where it's just super expensive. You have to sit through so long of ad, like half an hour of ads, and then people just fucking talk around you anyway. It's like, yeah, like it's like how taxis went unopposed for like a century, and then Uber came along and they said, oh, like they're taking all our money. And it's like, yeah, because you cornered the market and you didn't have to improve, and now a competitor's come along and you're just complaining about it. It's like, you actually need to adapt or die. I'm sorry, movie theaters, but you
do. Yeah, like a competitor came along and based its entire market model on losing money for like 10 years by not paying their drivers enough money to live on, and all the taxi companies that actually have unionized workers who are earning wages that, you know, can actually make them live, can't compete with the prices. And so you've got a big tech company that can afford to just lose money for 10 years until it puts all the taxi companies out of business, and then they win. So the movies should just do the same thing.
Yeah, so you get it, Jeremy. Thank you.
See, there are two diametrically opposed viewpoints here, and I'd like to tell everyone that I think the truth is somewhere in the middle.
You're so brave.
I just think that it's, yeah, my main, if you take one thing away from this, it's my opinion is that this is a great way of not punishing the rest of the world for America fucking up the pandemic. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, America. This is actually just what you have to deal with for doing such a shit job. I'm sorry. And it's like, oh no, it was our president. Yeah, you voted for him.
Well, so. I feel like none of the people listening to this podcast probably voted for him. So,
yeah, but they're complicit. All Americans are bastards.
or as we like to say, ab.
So the film I am talking about here is called Judas and the Black Messiah. Now, I don't know if you guys have seen the trailer for this, but it's fucking dope. It's a real cool trailer. So this stars Daniel Kaluuya as
Fred Hampton.
And it also stars Lakeith Stanfield and Jesse Plemons, who are all actors that I will watch in anything. And just when you get this like really, really well-made trailer that just hypes you up, this is a must-see for me. This might even make my top most anticipated. Yeah.
Jesse Plemons looks like despicable in it as well. He looks like devious, like pure evil, man. It's so great to see him returning to his roots.
He's
you
just
know?
Got that punchable face, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and this is like, and I think I've said before, but it's like, this is one of those roles where it's like Jesse Plemons is filling the void left by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
He does look absolutely. So similar.
But yeah, so as Daniel Kaluuya as Fred Hampton, who was the chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, and William O'Neill, Lakeith Stanfield's character, agrees to become an FBI informant to take him down, and Jesse Plemons plays the FBI guy that kind of that brings him in. But yeah,
it looks awesome, man.
Yeah, check out the trailer if you haven't seen it. It looks fucking sick. All right, moving right along. There's also a film called Minari coming out the same day as Judas and the Black Messiah. Do you guys know much about this?
Never heard of it.
So this is one. Here's the synopsis. A Korean family moves to an Arkansas farm in search of its own American dream. Amidst the challenges of this new life and the strange and rugged Ozarks, they discover the undeniable resilience of family and what really makes a home. So this stars Steven Yeun, and it's directed by Lee Isaac Chung. And
I have heard of
this is one of those ones again where it's like I've heard nothing but good things about this film.
Yeah, isn't it already out? I think it's already out.
This much like Nomadland, I think, has been touring like indie circuits, it's been available, but this is when it's getting a wide release.
Yeah.
And it comes out in New Zealand on that day. So same day as that, something that I'm sure we just as high quality as Judas and the Black Messiah and Minari is To All the Boys, Always and Forever. One of three Netflix trilogies. Or Netflix franchises releasing a third installment in 2021. You've got To All the Boys, Always and Forever. You've got The Kissing Booth 3, and you've got a franchise very close to our hearts, A Princess Switch 3. Which one are you guys most anticipating?
I'm anticipating...
Which is the dumbest looking film you hope comes out in 2021?
Well, the dumbest looking one is probably Princess Switch 3. I feel like that's going to be pretty dumb in a fun way.
No doubt.
Also my most anticipated. Whoop, whoop.
I've heard. To All the Boys serves its purpose. If you know, like that franchise.
Yeah,
I've
seen the first one, and I think you have as well, Jeremy, haven't you?
Yeah, I watched the first one. I really liked it. It was one of those movies where I was just like, I heard a sequel came out, and I was like, I don't need to see that. The first one did what it needed to do.
I think it was the last film I watched in 2018. It was the 251st movie I watched because it was Christmas. It was New Year's Eve. I was bored at work and I was like, fuck it. I'm going to watch All the Boys I've Loved Before.
It's also interesting with a podcast such as ours, which focuses primarily on franchises, to see what a trilogy burst forth from the fertile grounds of Netflix in such quick succession. Like, I almost feel like they cheated. Like, does this deserve to be a franchise if it's like these cheaply made, you know,
if they just did it so quick.
Yeah, but so cheap as well. They feel like if these movies were like furniture you assemble, that they'd fall apart very easily. You know, like
it's the IKEA franchise.
Is it IKEA? I thought IKEA was a bit more reliable, but maybe that's a great.
No, IKEA is just like the sort of flat pack, just get it done.
Yeah,
you know,
fuck,
nothing
they make
special.
Good meatballs and cinnamon
Whereas
rolls.
Whereas, like, you know, you're talking about your Star Wars and your Indiana Jones would be like your Danske Möbler.
Yeah. Whereas, like, film franchise Fortnite, the To All the Boys trilogy feels a little easy, you know.
A little on the nose.
Yeah, I mean, I think releasing one movie every year for getting a trilogy done in 3 years is like, whoa.
I think that's what it is. I don't think it's a real franchise if it's released year to year.
Well, no. Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
something to say about that.
There's a few episodes we'll have to cancel. Some that we'll have to stop in the middle of.
Something like Lord of the Rings is different because they planned it that way. They did not plan to make a To All the Boys trilogy. They just were able to crank them out.
When the first one came out, it was confirmed to have two sequels.
Okay. I don't know what I'm talking about. And it sucks
you
that...
You clearly don't.
It sucks that it's about To All the Boys I Loved Before, because I could probably talk quite knowledgeably about several other topics, but not this one.
AJ doesn't take seriously films that were aimed at teenage girls.
Yeah.
Not true.
Another film that I'm sure you'll be able to talk about, AJ, and this one is released on Warner Brothers HBO Max as well, Tom and Jerry. Very lukewarm response from you two.
Is this live action?
Good question.
It's live action, but Tom and Jerry are animated in 2D.
Are they animated?
It's like a Roger Rabbit thing, but it's very flat. Like, you look at the trailer, and Roger Rabbit, like, it really feels like they're inhabiting that space. And Who Framed Roger Rabbit was such a pioneer of all these techniques, and they really challenged themselves. Tom and Jerry just looks like they filmed the entire film and then just doodled them over top.
Rotoscoped it over.
Yeah, there's not much effort to really make them feel like they're part of the scene.
I can't imagine this will be a particularly memorable movie, but it could be good for some laughs. Who knows? It's hard to tell with this
couple
of thing.
Yucks.
Yeah, a couple of yucks.
Also that day, and I believe this is coming to Apple TV Plus, is Cherry. This is the Russo brothers' first post-MCU film. It stars Tom Holland as a war vet who turns to Robin Banks. And apparently... it's not very good.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer and I didn't think it looked particularly amazing.
Yeah, I watched part of the trailer and then I got bored of it.
But you're such a Russo brothers stan.
I've never said that.
I think that you like them.
Yeah, maybe you've never said the words, I'm a big fan of the Russo brothers, but you've said the next best thing several times.
Yeah, you have gushed, you have used the words Russo brothers in a full gush moment.
Mm. What? Because I was talking about Endgame I had to mention the directors.
You didn't. They should go uncredited.
Kevin Feige, man.
Now, Kevin Feige, there's someone I stan. I ship me and Kevin Feige.
Okay, I was going to say, that's not... Oh, okay. I ship Kevin Feige. It's like, okay, with who?
Where to? Where's he going? Overnight or a week?
You're so not woke, Jeremy.
No, I haven't seen anything about this movie. I don't have a particularly high regard for the Russo brothers directing non-blockbustery kind of films.
You don't like You, Me and Dupree?
You don't like Welcome to Collingwood?
I mean, yeah, I think subtlety is not their strong point.
Imagine if we ever did the Russo brothers for the director project and like everyone just picked You, Me and Dupree.
Yeah, I think it looks like it might be a little bit like over dramatic. Like it looks a bit try hard.
It's Tom Holland trying to prove he can act and the Russo brothers trying to prove they can direct.
Yeah. So 5th of March, we have Coming to America. Now the two there is a two.
Why would it be a two? I don't understand that. What does that signify?
It's a sequel.
To
Coming to America.
Is two a two in the original as well?
No, it's a two.
Oh, okay.
It's a T-O.
Ah.
Yeah.
Very clever.
So, Coming to America, have either of you guys seen the first one?
No, I have nothing to say about this. I have no idea. Really?
I have seen it, but I saw it when I shouldn't have been watching it in the 90s. I was far too young, and therefore it kind of totally passed me by. I do remember having seen it, though.
Right. Well, should we talk about something more?
What I'm excited about is it's actually a full-blown comedy movie, which you get so few of these days. And so I think that actually getting a movie, getting a sequel to an 80s comedy is just an exciting, I think it's just an exciting thing because I just like to, even when they're crap, I do love a big swing for a comedy movie, you know?
Look, I don't know anything about it, but it's a sequel to an 80s comedy, so it bodes well.
Oh, yeah, I know. Anchorman 2, here we come, but even worse.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Eddie Murphy's always, he's always bankable, right? Also, the poster for this has Eddie Murphy's Prince Akeem looking through a window that's partially rolled down. And there's a sign that says New York reflected in the window, which means that the original sign is backwards. Because it's reflected the right way around. Day as that, a film that I think we're probably all a lot more looking forward to, Chaos Walking. Remember this? We finally saw a trailer for it.
Oh my gosh.
This is its third appearance on a most anticipated podcast.
It's the new New Mutants.
Yeah, except like there's just no reason to care about it.
And the trailer for this revealed that not only does it not look like a particularly good movie, it looks like it's made an astonishingly silly creative decision, which makes it better in a way because now it looks laughable, not just forgettable.
Do you want to explain for people who don't remember what Chaos Walking is?
So Chaos Walking is a movie we've been talking about at each of these start of the year junctures for a while. It was originally written by Charlie Kaufman, whose identity has been completely scrapped from the current, what looks like the current version. It stars Tom Holland and Daisy Ridley. It was filmed in like 2016.
You know, back when they were like early, like, ooh, they're breakout stars.
Yeah, yeah. Not when one of their franchises died in a heap. And the
which one?
The plot is basically all women have been killed on this, I think it's Earth, and all the remaining men on the planet, their thoughts are vocalized. You can hear their thoughts and you can see their thoughts if they think of like a monster. You see the monster. And Daisy Ridley's from outer space and she crash lands and she's the only woman there, and so they all bandy together to
And so she doesn't have the noise, it's called, which is being able to see her thoughts.
And here's the thing. It looks very stupid. It looks very trying to take an inherently silly idea seriously. And while I don't think it will be good, who's really good at making inherently silly ideas serious, or who's really good at kind of that off kilter, very self-hating male, self-hating artist kind of.
Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
I realized that's what it sounded like I was leading you to. I was leading you back to Charlie Kaufman. I absolutely see this as an idea originally by Charlie Kaufman that was then adopted by someone else and had
it
all of the
It is based on a book, to be fair.
Right, okay. But then had all of the spark, like the Kaufman spark removed from it in favor of a Hunger Games ripoff years after Hunger Games ripoffs have been bankable.
Yeah.
Like, they're literally unbankable. We've seen it. There are three examples of a film that either is a Hunger Games movie or came out in the wake of Hunger Games that either made no money or was not made or was delayed and made no money because of that. Those three examples are Hunger Games, the final Hunger Games, the final Divergent movie was never made, and the final Maze Runner movie got delayed way too long.
Yeah, I think it's just a lot of effort to go through to justify why your film doesn't pass the Bechdel test. It's like, no, all the women were killed and they had to import a woman.
The implication there that part of the plot was thought of after they've written it is very funny to me. It's such a hard thing to go back and integrate
Shit, there's only one female character in this entire script. Oh, all the women were killed. It's all good.
Make it relevant. Make it work it in. Work it in.
Because also, like, this film was filmed pre-Me Too.
Oh, was too.
So it's probably very problematic.
Scrap it, I reckon. Scrap it.
Just dump it on HBO now.
So speaking of dumping things on streaming, thank you for that segue, Jeremy. Raya and the Last Dragon. March 5th. So this is, it's not being so much dumped on streaming, but it is going to be available with the premium access that was done with Mulan. However, in places without Disney Plus, this will still get a theatrical release. In fact, I think it's getting a theatrical release everywhere. It's just also being made available with the premium access where it's going to be $40 New Zealand.
Really? I thought this one wasn't going to cost. I didn't think they were doing
that
again.
I believe it is. But but yeah, the fact that they've now made it optional is somewhat allows me to forgive it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because that was the big thing with Mulan. It was like, well, you got, with Premier Access on Disney Plus. With Mulan, it's like, well, you've got no option. And the film's also really bad, whereas I feel like Ryan the Last Dragon might be good.
I feel like it might be good. I feel like it'll at least be as good as the, other modern Disney princess movies.
I think it's really interesting that, I just think it's kind of interesting that, like, both...
I just think it's funny how...
I just think it's funny how Disney have only charged us $40 to watch movies about Asian women.
Is that a correlation or causation thing? That's the question.
I mean, we got to see Soul for free.
That's true. Is it racist then? Which way is it racist?
I don't know. I mean, I just think it's like, what?
Look, I think we can just all agree on the fact that Disney is racist.
I agree.
Well, I think at the very least, what we can all agree on is that no one is paying $40 to see a movie.
it makes sense if you're like in a household and you would normally be having to, get everyone together and paying $40 and you can see it as many times as you want. That makes sense.
Especially with kids, you don't want to pay lots of money for a new movie that your kids might not like when you can just watch the movies that they love billions and billions of times over and over again.
Yeah.
Disney Plus should adopt the indie game payment strategy where you just pay what you think is fair.
Yeah. So this stars Kelly Marie Tran as Raya. Kelly Marie Tran of Star Wars Last Jedi fame. And also Awkwafina.
And 2 seconds of Star Wars Rise of Skywalker fame.
But yeah, I'll mainly be watching this for Awkwafina, personally. I'm a big fan of hers. Not that I have anything against Kelly Marie Tran, because I'm not a racist or a sexist. like every Star Wars fan who didn't like The Last Jedi. Awkwafina's fantastic. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think, has there been a trailer or anything? There has been, hasn't there?
There was like a little preview kind of thing during the
investors meeting. Yeah, I mean, this is, I'm not expecting this to be amazing, but I'm expecting it to be enjoyable,
Yeah. I'm not expecting it to be amazing, but I am expecting it to be fantastic.
I think what's really interesting is that you see through Disney's history, the golden ages are where they go through the periods of doing these kinds of very well-known or kind of embedded in culture fairy tales. So you have like the sort of Sleeping Beauties and Cinderellas and all that sort of stuff. And then you have the wastelands of kind of like the Black Cauldron and Rescuers and all that sort of stuff. And then they get back to doing kind of the big fairy tales that everyone knows about. I do wonder if they're going to dip back into kind of a period where the movies just aren't speaking to people as much as they have been.
Right. Yeah, well, I think that the thing about something like Raya and the Last Dragon is I'm expecting it to feel familiar in a way, you know? Like, it seems like it's going to be a bit of a return to form for... Well, I mean, like, not that Disney's been off form with their, you know, their 3D output.
Yeah, Frozen 2 was pretty bad.
Well, all right, Jeremy, save it for most disappointing films of 2019. So still in March... 12th of March, The King's Man. So this is the prequel to The Kingsman.
We've talked about this before, haven't we? Because this was going to come out in 2020.
Yeah, it was. That's a reoccurring theme of this podcast.
And I'm going to point it out every time I remember. This conversation feels awfully familiar.
So The King's Man, I'm excited for this. The trailers haven't excited me particularly, but... Kingsman is a guilty pleasure of mine, and it'll be fun to see Matthew Vaughn going full Matthew Vaughn in, in a period piece.
I feel like and this is no fault of anyone's except the way I've hardwired my brain. I feel like I can only be like excited about a certain movie for so long before I reach a dip.
I know what you mean.
And for things like The King's Man, it's like, I could have gotten on the hype for this, but like because it's taken so long and I saw the trailer like a year ago, it's like, I don't know. I'm not going to not see it or anything, but it's hard for me to get excited when the usual life cycle of being excited for a movie has expired because of everything getting delayed.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think as well, like the fact that, so the first trailer for this was like very serious.
Mm.
And then the second one had a bit more of the kind of fun action that we expect from a Kingsman film. And yeah, the whiplash of those was weird because it was interesting seeing the first trailer and being like, oh wow, it's like a serious Kingsman movie, and then seeing the second one and it's like, it's not at all, and then the third one it's like, is it both?
I'm just looking forward to the end of the movie when we figure out what other horrendous, like, disgusting thing Matthew Vaughn is going to do to a female character.
Yeah, I genuinely, I'm really excited to see what that is in this film.
There's always one. There's always one. There's one moment in both Kingsman movies which feel...
Do you want to explain both of them?
No, I don't, but I'll say they feel too inappropriate for the movie that they're in. That happens.
Feel too inappropriate for this podcast. I like it in the first one. I think it's very funny in the first one.
Well, listen to any other podcast we've talked about Kingsman to find out what that moment is, because I'm pretty sure we bring it up at every single time, every single one.
Yeah. So a week later, we have a film called, which we haven't seen anything for yet. I didn't realize it was coming out so soon, but it's called The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
This looks great. Sounds great.
Have you heard about this, Jeremy?
No, tell me.
So this stars Nicolas Cage as Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yes.
So it's an obsessive fan forces actor Nicolas Cage to recreate his most famous characters and scenes during a birthday party. And it's a down on his luck Nicolas Cage who is dying to get a role in a Tarantino film, and he attends like a Colombian drug lord's birthday party or something like that.
So does that mean Tarantino's going to be in it?
I don't think so. It does have Pedro Pascal in it.
That's the next best thing.
Oh, he's the Mexican billionaire and Cage's super fan who sends him $1 million.
And Neil Patrick Harris and Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah.
This is great.
This sounds like it'll be a very fun movie. One of those, like, I reckon this will be the Borat 2 of this year. Do you know what I mean? Like the kind of like, it's hard to believe it got made and feels like it's about something that no one's ever made a movie about. And, like, I feel like this is promising, even though I have heard about this for a while.
Well, no, I feel like this is going to turn out more like a glimpse inside the mind of Charles Swan III.
Who's that?
So that is a movie written, directed, and produced by Roman Coppola, starring Charlie Sheen, Jason Schwartzman, Bill Murray, and Patricia Arquette. It was released on my birthday in 2013. It was released on my 20th birthday. And yeah, it kind of just very much flew under the radar.
Wait, there was a movie about Charlie Swan?
Oh my gosh. But this was very much like a capitalizing on the winning kind of thing.
Oh, and really? Like,
but it's like an art housey kind of version of capitalizing on that. I remember hearing about it coming out and then just being like, oh, that look could be fun. And then it came out and no one gave a shit. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent also stars Lily Sheen, who is Michael Sheen and Kate Beckinsale's daughter.
So Jess will be right there.
I thought you were going to say some relation to Charlie Sheen.
Well, no. But it is a Sheen. Pedro Pascal will be fun. That actually gave me a lot of hope for this film, reading that he was in it. So, 26th of March, this was... and prepare for this podcast to be out of date, because we're getting Godzilla vs. Kong, which is going to be released on Warner Brothers HBO Max. It was supposed to be coming out in May, and then it was pulled forward after they had a big hubbub about the Warner Brothers HBO Max release thing. The poster was just released, and it's a fucking dope poster. You guys both did really big wide eyes at me, as if I was missing something.
I was responding to Jeremy's wide eyes. What do you want to
say? No. I'm like, Godzilla versus Kong. This is very film franchise Fortnite's content.
Yeah. So this was they've said there's definitively going to be a winner theoretically. But the thing is, a trailer is coming out about the same time we're releasing this podcast. So you probably have just watched the trailer if you're listening to this. We probably are as well. But I don't know. Whatever. I'm sure it'll look nice. But after King of the Monsters, what a crock of shit. And it's got Julian Dennison in it.
After the three legendary MonsterVerse movies, which are Godzilla 2014, Kong Skull Island, and King of the Monsters, I have no hope in this being good at all. I think that the best one of those three movies so far was Godzilla, and even that is like a woefully flawed movie. I have no faith in this being any good, and I don't think there will be any more after it. I think this will be the sinking ship of the legendary MonsterVerse, making that last bloop as it falls beneath the waves.
Also, sorry, just as a proposition, can we just say Godzilla versus Kong is not a fight that I'm wondering who's going to win? Because there is
obviously Kong.
There is no effing way that a large primate will be able to defeat an enormous dinosaur that breathes blue fire.
Now, Jeremy, did you say effing instead of fucking because you might wake your daughter and she might hear you swear? Is that why?
No.
You seem so mad. You shut up.
Yeah, he does. This is like Dad Jeremy getting angry at us.
No, it's not funny.
It's just dang it all to heck.
They made Kong in Kong Skull Island bigger than he normally is, and that's also set earlier. So they're trying to do. I think they're trying to do a bit of like he wasn't fully grown in that, but. There's potentially going to be some scaling up of Kong. I'm sure it's going to be. There's going to be some third kaiju that they end up teaming.
Unless what you mean by scaling up is that he's literally going to grow scales and kind of armor plating on his body.
Dope.
Because he's currently like a fleshy mammal. He may be big, but he's still a fleshy mammal.
He could still take you, Jeremy.
He could, but I'm not Godzilla yet.
One day.
Anyway, I just think what an absolute crock to like pit Godzilla versus King Kong just because they're two monsters that you have the rights to.
All right, 2nd of April, nobody is releasing.
Oh, the Bob Odenkirk's Taken.
The Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah, Bob Odenkirk's. Have you seen the trailer for this, anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah? Jeremy?
No, I mean, you just said Bob Odenkirk's Taken, so I'm imagining that it's...
Yeah, it's like John Wick, but with Bob Odenkirk.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it looks all right. I mean, I'm sure it'll be, you know...
Fine.
Nothing incredible, but like, I'm looking forward to it. I really like Bob Odenkirk, and I think this looks fun. It's fun. When the poster released, someone on Reddit was like, there's going to be a scene where someone says to Bob Odenkirk, who the fuck are you? And he's going to say, me, I'm nobody. And then that scene was in the trailer, which dropped an hour later.
So this person knew.
Yeah.
So this is the second film from the guy that directed Hardcore Henry.
Right, yeah, yeah.
The POV film. Who was also the cinematographer for that, and I guess he played Hardcore Henry, maybe. I don't know. No, Hardcore Henry, and that was oh no.
No, yeah, Sharlto Copley was in the movie, but he was like the guide.
Wow, Sharlto Copley is a name that I have not heard in a while.
And it's so fun to say, and he's not in enough.
And yeah, and he's a good screen presence.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, remove Andy Serkis from everything and just put Sharlto Copley in that.
My precious. Nobody likes you.
So Sharlto Copley's most recent film was a film that came out last year called The Last Days of American Crime. It has violent content and depictions of police brutality and came out during the George Floyd protests. Many critics labeled it one of the worst films of all time, and it holds a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh my God. Doesn't sound like a fun watch though, does it?
No, it does not.
It's not a 0% in the same way Beethoven's Third is a 0%.
Yeah, that sounds very, very interesting. Maybe watch that. It's a Netflix film. So 9th of April, a week later, we've got Bob's Burgers, the movie. Have you guys ever watched Bob's Burgers?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. Like, if this goes straight to Netflix, I'll probably chuck it on. Hmm. That's my review of Bob's Burgers, the movie. So a week later, we've got Mortal Kombat. Now, this is, of course, based on the video game franchise. Are either of you guys fans?
Will this be the one that breaks the video game curse? Every year we're like, this is it. Well, actually, I don't think, to in credit to us, I don't think we've ever been fully convinced that this will be the one. It's so amazing that it hasn't been broken yet, though. Like,
I think, are you forgetting about Sonic the Hedgehog? I'm not forgetting about film for kids.
Yeah, okay. The first great video game movie is still to happen, and I think that's so interesting because everyone making a video game movie must be so cognizant of that fact. They must be so focused on making a good one finally, and yet no one's really been able to do it. But Mortal Kombat, I think. I don't know much about Mortal Kombat. Does it need to be self-aware? Does it need to be funny to be good? Or will it be very serious?
It needs to not be happening in 2021. Really? I mean, seriously, when was the last time anyone played Mortal Kombat? Like, it's so old.
2019, Mortal Kombat 11.
Mm, 11, Jeremy.
Oh,
11.
So they're continuing to make these?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I'm so out of touch with video games. But like,
does your daughter honestly, not play video games? Mortal Kombat... Does your daughter not play Mortal Kombat 11?
Well, yeah, I'll be introducing it to her tomorrow. But
seriously, ready for the movie.
Like, as a property, Mortal Kombat was everywhere in, like, I don't know, I want to say 1998 when I was in America. Like, it was the game everyone was playing. And now,
it's the game,
like,
nobody's
there are
playing.
So many other video games that have more cultural cachet than Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that's what you do. Maybe that's how you break the curse.
And have either of you seen the original Mortal Kombat movie?
No, I've seen that one clip everyone goes on about. AJ, what are
you
doing?
I'm aware that it's very silly. Oh, just talk. No one can see me doing it.
It is honestly so terrible and not in an entertaining way. It's
bad. Actually just offensive.
Yeah.
So Mortal Kombat, is this going to be the one to break the video game curse?
Absolutely not.
Yes. I'm putting money down. All money yes. on Mortal Kombat.
Oh, that's this year's bid, is it? How much money yeah. are you putting down, and what's the actual measurable result?
Okay, here's what I'm putting down.
Oh, I will pay. No. I don't even know if I want to take this. This is awful.
I will pay you each $10. $10 each.
Yeah.
If Mortal Kombat, do we want to go Rotten Tomatoes score? I guess that's...
I don't know, mate. You're running this.
Well, because I want to say it's like generally received as being the best video game movie.
Right.
Whoa. No, that's not what you were saying.
No.
You're saying. Like, because it's not the best video game movie. It's saying
great video game movie.
Yeah.
Okay, but that measurement of great, I guess, is... What does Sonic have on Rotten Tomatoes?
One moment. Sonic movie.
Is Sonic the best one so far?
Or is Pikachu?
Detective Pikachu probably has more on Rotten Tomatoes than
63%
Sonic.
63% for Sonic, 68% for Detective Pikachu.
Okay, this film has to have... To break 70, then.
All right.
That's my bet. Mortal Kombat, the movie, 2021, will break 70% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That is the safest $10 I've ever owned.
You guys have to each pay me $10, though, if it's wrong.
All right.
Sure. I mean, you know, I'm not going to do anything stupid, but I was just about to say, I'll pay you either.
I'll pay you $30.
So around this time, it's worth mentioning, this was just announced today, we were supposed to be getting No Time to Die, the James Bond film, which we, a year ago, started our journey doing the James Bond films to try and tie into the release of. It's now been pushed to October, and it is worth mentioning that No Time to Die was kind of the first big blockbuster that moved last year, and that kind of paved the way for all the other studios to delay their films. And this is the first big, like, 2021 release that has been delayed this year. Ghostbusters Afterlife was delayed end of last year. It was supposed to come out around the same April, May kind of slot, has been moved until later in the year. But it is interesting to see this could potentially mean that we're about to see a whole slew of release date changes again. I imagine all the HBO Max, Warner Brothers ones are fixed, because that's what they've done. That's why they did it, is they've been able to put a line in the sand and be like, this is when this film is coming out. That cannot change.
I think that the influence of the UK film market is actually really interesting with this one, because essentially Bond films are like the biggest thing that comes out in the UK. And and by
Except
October...
Coronavirus.
By October, they had everyone vaccinated in the UK. So I think October's a really interesting... It's an interesting choice because I think it's basically their safe bet on when basically all of... Well, the majority of people in the UK will be vaccinated.
Compare that to last year, when in early July, they were going... Well, okay, things won't be all right by mid-July for Tenet, but surely at the end of July, they'll be fine. But now it's like, with the vaccine rollout, it's like, okay, there actually might be a feasible chance we could release this in a few months, but probably not in 2 months.
Yeah.
You could not have picked a funnier title for a film to be delayed almost 2 years. Almost 2 years this film has been delayed, and it's called No Time to Die. There is a time limit.
If it gets delayed again... It'll be the longest gap between Bond films.
The most time to die he's ever had.
Another film that was originally supposed to come out and is the first film I remember being delayed because of COVID is A Quiet Place Part 2. So this is one that if Bond is moving out of that release date, this could potentially move as well. But A Quiet Place Part 2, Jeremy, this was our annual excursion a few years ago to see the first one. As much as I kind of enjoyed the first one, I'm not sure I'm super excited for the second
one. There's no need for it.
It's part prequel, part sequel, and it looks like they're doing a little bit of the Aliens thing, going from like a bit like horror to action, but it's got Cillian Murphy in it. AJ, you like him?
I like him. I think that, again, this feel I'm desperately trying to remember what we said about it last year, because it's probably the same. But like, I guess this, like, with the same thing I said about The Kingsman, where it's like my hype level for this movie has expired. But for this, even more so, where now I'm like, maybe like living with it without seeing it for this long has made me feel like this is going to be your classic inferior sequel. This is going to do every, you know, it's going to have some cool stuff in it, but have like three or four crucial flaws which break the immersion of the movie. That being said, as discussed many times on this podcast, the first one is not a perfect movie either. So maybe we'll be looking at an imperfect movie and an even more imperfect sequel.
Yeah. Jeremy, any thoughts?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how audiences respond after COVID to
a pandemic movie, essentially.
Well, it's not a pandemic movie, but it's a dystopian. It's kind of dystopian kind of society shutting down because of something that affects the whole world. I actually just think there's going to be zero appetite for people to want to go see anything like that. I actually think we're going to end up with
absolutely
the kind of movies that are going to be made and successful over the next few years are going to be extremely happy movies, I think. It's like after World War II, you know, films that were kind of very peppy and hopeful were very successful.
Well, so was film noir though, Jeremy, the genre that I studied in Year 13 Media Studies, born out of a post-World War II malaise and then is one of the only genres in movie history to disappear completely because society no longer needed it in the 60s when the free love movement happened and no one had time for movies about existential dread and powerful woman who will steal all your money is what film noirs are about.
I really wish that you at that age were making like YouTube videos about this sort of stuff, because man, I would have loved.
I have mentioned this in several YouTube videos.
I would have loved to have seen the YouTube kind of film analysis videos that 18-year-old AJ was making.
Absolutely, one day. I think there's one out there. It's not on Cold Pop Show, but there is one.
I wish I could move right into the happy film. It would have been perfect segue, but we do have a film that comes between them,
which is miserable.
Black Widow, Marvel's Black Widow, kicking off Phase 4 finally on May 7th.
Did WandaVision not kick off Phase 4?
Well, it did, but kicking off the cinematic Phase 4. Speaking of which, we should wrap this up because there's a new episode of WandaVision.
See you later, everybody.
So, Black Widow, what do we think? The thing that I'm most anticipating about this film is how it justifies its own existence.
I mean, I apologize, but this is the conversation we've been having about this movie for 2 years, right? Yeah. It's like, why, what a weird place to release a Black Widow movie. And as I can't remember if we had this on the last time we talked about this or not, my theory and many people's theories, I think, is that what it's going to do is introduce Florence Pugh, and she will pick up the mantle of Black Widow moving forward in the MCU, and that's why we got this movie now, because the Black Widow series, you know, Black Widow 2 and 3 will follow Florence Pugh post-Endgame.
It almost feels like it's because we've spoken about this before, but Ike Perlmutter was the one that kind of said, no, you can't have black superheroes, you can't have female superheroes, whereas Kevin Feige has been pushing for this for a long time, apparently. And this is kind of his apology. So they wrapped up Natasha's storyline in Endgame, and this is his kind of apology to Scarlett Johansson to be like, look, we're going to let you have your movie, and it just happens to fall in this really weird time. There was the theory as well that it would be like people telling stories at her funeral, but the fact that it's entirely set between Civil War and Infinity War is kind of like, there's a lot that's just like, why are you doing this? But like you said, I'm sure either Florence Pugh or like Taskmaster will show up further into.
I mean, isn't it possible that Hawkeye could just come across like a wishing stone and then, like, you know, just totally like map Scarlett Johansson's face onto like an unsuspecting woman, and then she just gets
his wife. Ooh.
Yuck. Anyway,
yeah, surprisingly little to say for a Marvel movie, but
that's its legacy.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fun. So 21st of May, This film, Free Guy, the Ryan Reynolds vehicle, which is he realizes he's an NPC in a video game. The original trailer for this came out and it looked like RIPD. It looked like an absolute crock of shit. However, the second trailer came out and it's like he lives in this super violent video game and he realizes he's going to go out there and he's going to be like a nice guy, essentially. And he goes viral for just being like this nice person inside this video game. And this was originally supposed to come out, you know, earlier last year, and it was moved to December last year. And I remember thinking, like, this is going to come out. It's not going to be great, but everyone's going to be like, this is the film we need right now. A film that just, the message of it is just be nice to people.
So this lead up was not you saying, now I actually think it looks pretty good. It's you saying, all the bloody Justin and Brittany wannabes are going to think it's real good, even though it's
Sorry,
not.
Sorry, Justin and Brittany wannabes? What decade are you in?
Yeah. What decade are you in? who can honestly say they would not want to be in Britney Spears' position right now?
Her dad.
like all the Justin and Britney wannabes.
It's a South Park reference. It's a shorthand to how to talk about normies. Granted, 20 years ago, but still, it still works.
So
goddammit.
Bad.
Oh, what?
Why would
you whatever.
Anyway,
fuck all y'all.
Anyway, yeah. So all the Justin and Britney wannabes, yeah. Well, I think
maybe I meant Justin Bieber. Maybe that's the Justin I was referring to.
All you Justin and Zendaya wannabes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like
I have to find a relevant Britney. I meant these two.
it'll probably be a fun watch. It's I think a lot of us are getting Ryan Reynolds fatigue.
Well, I think Ryan Reynolds doing that Ryan Reynolds character. Yeah.
It's pretty insane, isn't it? Like, I guess this has happened all through movie history. You look at like Jim Carrey and stuff, but it's like it's pretty funny to have a Ryan Reynolds brand
archetype. Yeah.
Richard, why do you keep licking your pop filter?
I'm not actually licking it. I'm moving my tongue in front of it, and it's just to get a reaction out of you.
Okay.
Mission accomplished.
And Jeremy, what are you tearing up? What are you doing up there?
All right, Mum.
Well, I can hear it while Richard's talking about his opinions. Well, put it down as a piece of bubble wrap.
The sound integrity of this podcast must not be besmirched.
Same day as that, we're getting Spiral from the Book of Saw, starring Chris
Rock.
No,
thank you.
Oh, this is
He's your favorite Chris, Jeremy.
Is this going to be like The Witches, where like it's just Saw, but with a narration by Chris Rock?
I think what we have here is a very interesting little case study that someone in your position and my position, Richard, are uniquely qualified to recognize, which is this is nothing new. Every, like, in a lot of ways, Saw was to the mid-2000s what A Nightmare on Elm Street was to the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. And all of these horror franchises, they do the original run of films, in Saw's case we got 7, and then they try to do a reboot, in Saw's case we got Jigsaw, a movie nobody remembers now, and then after that failed reboot happens, they try to do it again from like a different angle, and the title's a bit different. So Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we had a movie called Leatherface, Friday the 13th, Jason started taking the title instead of Friday the 13th. And this is what we're just
seeing. We had one that they just called Halloween.
We're just seeing the same cycle repeat again. It's just, it hasn't repeated for 10 or 20 years, and now we're seeing it repeat again. I think it's very interesting to watch, and I don't think this will be particularly different, but if film franchise Fortnite's started 10 years from now and we drew the Saw franchise, we would have the same conversation about Saw's tumultuous midlife as we did about, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacres.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
So 28th of May, we've got a couple of films. One is called For Nine, And the other is called Cruella. What do we want to talk about first here, gang?
Ooh, for nine, for nine.
Am so I pronouncing for nine, this right? For nine? Do I have to have watched the other eight firsts to understand?
So this is the ninth installment, technically the tenth, of the Fast and Furious franchise.
Furious?
Fast and for real.
Fast and Furious? I bet that's on the internet somewhere. Or the furries.
The film stars Cardi B and Charlize Theron with Helen Mirren. But yeah, this is kind of... after the events of The Fate of the Furious, Dominic Toretto and his family must face Dominic's brother, younger brother, Jacob, a deadly
assassin.
It's
about family.
Who is working with their old enemy, Cypher, and who holds a personal vendetta against Dominic. That brother is played by none other than John Cena. This episode of the film of the Fast and Furious franchise also features the return of Jordana Brewster, who played partner in the film. And so Paul Walker in these films, Brian O'Connor, he's not dead. He's just gone away. And I think bringing back Mia Toretto is potentially a very risky move. But it also brings back Lucas Black, who was the main character in the third film. And also bringing back Han. And they're promising justice for Han.
Oh my gosh.
Who was killed off in the third film. And then the, what was it? 4, 5, 6, and even 7 were prequels.
No, 7 anyway, wasn't.
It's a very messy... No, 7, yeah. Yeah, it's a very messy movie, messy continuity, but should be a lot of fun. They've also confirmed that this film is going to take place in outer space.
Which, I mean, we've been waiting for. It's although, there's no Rock in this film, right?
Not the actor, no.
Yeah, no Rock, no Jason Statham, which is, I think, going to be interesting to see how well the films in their current state of kind of like suspended belief actually manages to go without the Rock, because I think he's the one who actually is that lodestar of like kind of, yeah, I'm okay with this because the Rock is enjoying himself.
Yeah, and like because Vin Diesel seems to think that people tune into these films because of the messages of family.
Or because of Vin Diesel.
Yeah. It's because of The Rock and Jason Statham.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to your point about Jordana Brewster's character, I mean, the whole idea of when Paul Walker died, you know, the way they wrote Brian out of the movie was basically by saying that, you know, hey, I've done this one last job, but it put my whole family at risk and I'm just not willing to risk my wife and children. It's just, you know, I'm going to get out so that I can protect them. And
yeah,
I mean, are they going to kill Brian off finally? And that's the reason that Jordana Brewster is coming back?
Surely Vin Diesel isn't comfortable with killing Brian off.
Like, well, but it's just like, why would Brian say, I need to get out because I need to protect my wife? However, if my wife wants to go into the fray, sure, look, let her.
Because he's a feminist, Jeremy, and he lets his wife be her own woman.
Yeah, yeah, that's what...
Because if there's one thing the Fast and Furious movies are, is explicitly feminist.
Yeah.
But also because there's the thing in this world where Dom named his son Brian... And like very much after his, but it's like he just moved away. You could call or text him at any time.
It's weird. It's a bad creative decision, in my opinion, to be like.
I mean, there are a lot. If we're gonna talk about Vin Diesel's creative decisions, like most of them are bad.
Would it have been better if he'd named his kid Paul, and it's not treated like it's like a metatextual resonance?
Yes,
and not. Yeah,
I think that would have been a better idea.
Yeah.
And no one goes, oh, that's so nice. Everyone's like, oh, Paul, good name. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
It can be a piece of trivia. Alrighty, thank you very much for listening to the most dumbest, most anticipated, dumbest looking movies that we anticipate or hope will come out in 2021. This is part one of a two-parter episode, so tune in next week for part two. And if you liked this episode, please consider supporting Cult Popture in all the places you can. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You can subscribe to us on both our YouTube channel and Cult Popture 2, which, if you listen to the podcast on YouTube, is where you're listening to this. It's where we put everything that doesn't quite fit being on the main channel. You can also join our Discord and talk about this stuff with us. It's the best way to keep in contact with us, and that is in the show notes of the episode. And you can also subscribe to our Patreon, donate to our Patreon if you'd like, at patreon.com/cultpopshire. But until then, we'll see you next week. Actually, I'll see you in just a few seconds for the post-credit scene, which is coming up with Richard and I right about now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All righty. Welcome back, Richard. You were gone for the outro, but you're back now for the post-credit scene at the end of this episode. The post-credit scene, by the way, is a little extra scene at the end of each episode where we talk to our patrons. We talk to people over at patreon.com/cultpopshire who donate $5 or more a month, and they give us something to talk about in our post-credits scene. And this time, the post-credits scene is brought to us by Nick Jones, a long lifetime fan of Cult Popshire, actually, because it's my brother. Thank you for being a supportive brother, Nick. And here is the question he poses us. He says, what are each of your most hated storytelling tropes / cliches / techniques and why? This is pretty interesting because a video essay / movie analysis channel such as us kind of relish these tropes because they're fun to point out and explain how they work. Usually we're in favor of tropes.
I can't really think of any that I actively hate, because there's ones that you would hate often show up in bad movies, kind of thing. And so you see it in a movie and you go, like things like, you just don't get it, do you? Like, I now get a kick out of seeing that, or in English, duh, come on.
Yeah. We're not so different, you and I.
Yeah, a lot of those like lazy writing ones. But I will say though, the ones I think about more often, like my favorite ones, I can tell you my favorite, like, it's not so much a storytelling cliche or trope, but it's like a trope used in film quite a bit, is revealing that music you thought was non-diegetic is actually diegetic. So it's things like a character's running and they're listening to headphones and it's got playing some upbeat music, and then someone interrupts them and they pull out a headphone and the music like cuts out on like the left hand side, and then or like someone will turn off a radio and you realize like, oh, it was actually playing in the scene. I always get a kick out of that.
Nice. I was reminded of a trope I dislike the other day because I saw one of those, you know, those Jane Lynch memes that were big a few weeks back. They were like, it was like I'm adapting the sentence.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm going to create an environment that is so toxic, but it was changed. I'm going to da 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 da. And I saw one that was like Shakespeare be like, I'm going to create a misunderstanding that is so easy to resolve. And I was so struck by that because I haven't read a lot of Shakespeare, but I did have to read Othello in year 13 English. And that's the entire crux of the story, basically hangs off Othello thinking his wife is cheating on him and never asking her, which isn't so bad when Like for most of the story, they aren't interacting. But there's a scene where they sit. He's like sitting at the edge of her bed, and he all but says, "I know you're cheating on me, and I'm going to kill you for it." And she never once goes, "What are you talking about?" Like, she has no idea. She just sort of senses that something's up, but never says, "What are you actually mad at me for?" And it's, I feel a bit sheepish trying to say Shakespeare is bad writing, but I was so annoyed by this in Othello. And I told my flatmates that this trope is something I'm not a fan of. And one of my flatmates was like, "Well, isn't that what is so beautiful about Shakespeare, so romantic about Shakespeare, is that it is these very human misunderstandings?" And you know, maybe there's credence to that, but in this case it's like, if I was, you know, if I was talking to someone and I was like, I'm, you know, what you did is unforgivable, and I'm going to kill you for it, and I wish it could be different, you're telling me the other person isn't going to be like, "What did I do?" And that's what apparently a lot of Shakespeare is like, but especially Othello. And so my most hated trope is from literally the generic shorthand for a well-written story.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.